Bad enough that some other bastard wants to chill you without us chilling ourselves.
In just a few seconds, the group had loosened the chains of torpor and fatigue, and were all running on adrenaline. Christie's hair still clung protectively to her head.
I've got a bad feeling about this, lover.
So have the rest of us.
No, not like that. I just get the feeling that this is going to be the easy part.
Fire blast. If this is the easy part, then I don't want to be around when the difficult part arrives.
Ready, JB?
Uh-huh.
Backs to the wall, people. This is it.
With caution, Ryan tried the wheel lock that opened the chamber door. They hadn't seen a chamber door like this since the old military installation in Dulce, New Mexico. Was this going to be a regular redoubt, or something different?
Huh?
The wheel gave easily under his grip, far easier than expected. Yet more evidence that this redoubt was in regular use. Did this mean someone else knew the secret of the gateways?
So far, so good.
Doesn't mean much. They're not stupid enough to rush us. Could make them more dangerous.
Uh-huh.
As they flattened themselves to the green and cobalt walls on the left side of the chamber door, Ryan reached out a hand and steadied himself to fling it open. JB stood slightly away from the wall, to one side of his friend, ready to step out and fire a covering blast as the one-eyed man flung himself through the door. Many years traversing the Deathlands and encountering death, staring it in the face before blasting it away, gave the two friends an almost telepathic bond. Ryan gave only the slightest of nods before flexing his wrist. JB stepped in front of the door at an oblique angle, aided by the hexagonal shape of the chamber, his finger closing on the Smith & Wesson's trigger and squeezing until the cartridge exploded with an almost deafening impact in the enclosed space. The flechettes of barbed steel were driven from the barrel in an ever-widening arc. Anyone standing in the room beyond wouldn't be standing for long. Ryan sprang through the doorway, rolling across the floor, trying to get a fix on any possible cover. He moved so quickly on the back of JB's shot that the hot air from the blaster seemed to brush his cheek as he passed. His eye took in the surroundings at a glance as he rolled. Everything seemed normal. The usual anteroom was missing, but the control room was fairly standard. There were the usual freestanding comp terminals, as well as desks, chairs, and terminals that blinked on and off in the controlled atmosphere. The harsh fluorescent lighting cast no shadow on the room, leaving no place for anyone to hide. Ryan came out of the roll into a crouch behind one of the desks, which he pushed on its side to provide cover. It would be no good against heavy blasters, but the steel would act as a shield against small caliber hand blasters, as well as providing a visual blind.
What?
Christie, Mildred, and Jack sprinted from the doorway to cover, risking their speed in the enclosed space against the reactions of anyone training a blaster on them. There were no blasters. There was nothing. Behind a desk on the far side of the room, Jack picked up a framed photograph that had been knocked onto the floor. The glass had cracked, throwing a web of lines across the smiling face of a young woman, long since dead.
Phew, not bad.
There had been similar personal mementos on desks in some of the other redoubts they had seen. They meant nothing to Jack, but it didn't escape his notice that there was no dust on the frame. It had been regularly cleaned. Without pause, he threw the frame high in the air, over the top of the desk, and out into the unknown territory that was the rest of the room. There was no response. No blaster fire. Jack aimed the Python over the top of the desk, bobbing up briefly to locate any enemies.
What the hell?
The room was empty. Seemingly. Mildred scanned the room.
Damn place is empty, Ryan.
Maybe. Maybe on the seams. Maybe not stoops.
The last thing any of them expected was the voice that came from the corridor beyond the door at the end of the room.
Right so far, Sarge. Let's see if they're officer material.
Wallace was watching the outsiders on a vid monitor positioned in the corridor. He could see the two men and two women strung out in a line behind their temporary cover. The camera was behind them, positioned on the wall above and to the right of the Matran's chamber door, on the angle of the hexagon. He now knew that there were at least four of them. They were sharp and showed intelligence. Were there any others still in the chamber? The armor glass was too opaque to be sure. Murphy stood behind the big man, watching over his shoulder. He was irritated that Wallace had taken over management of this operation. As head of SecCorp, it was Murphy's job to handle attacks of any kind, even if they came from within.
Temporary stalemate, Sarge. We go in, they blast. They get blasted back. Need them alive, but we got more men. Numbers, Sarge, that's the key. That's why the mechanism is so important.
Hmm.
Murphy realized the problem with the mechanism was bothering Wallace more than he wanted to let on. Why else mention it? This could be the break that Murphy had been waiting for. The circumstances when the regs could be broken. But that was for another time. Right now there were more pressing problems. Like how many were left in the chamber.
How many people beyond the door?
One is too many, Mildred. I feel like a complete stoop behind this desk.
Any cover is better than no cover, Christy. And if we don't know how many of them, they sure as hell don't know how many of us. Just keep your eyes peeled. Jack took the opportunity to wreck the area to the rear, knowing that Ryan had the front covered.
Not sure. Vid behind. Maybe watching us.
Look, Ryan.
What?
Smile. You're on TV.
One round from Mildred ZKR 551 took out the camera through the lens. Sparks from the camera rained over Ryan, but the one-eyed man ignored them, keeping his attention fixed on the redoubt doorway.
Just as well I held the second shot. If they know about you, then there's three of us they don't know about.
So what do we do? We can't stay here forever, just like we couldn't stay in that Mattrans chamber.
Jack had his back to the table, checking his blaster. He looked over at Ryan, smoothing the milk-white hair away from his scarred albino skin. His red eyes were piercing.
One trap for another.
Read something once about what they used to call a Mexican standoff. Bastard stoop name, but I guess this is what they meant. Damned monitor.
Sir, what do you want me to do, sir?
Somebody get this monitor fixed.
Sir.
I want them alive, Murphy. No casualties. I want to know how they use the Mattrans.
It might be that they don't see it that way, sir.
Wallace turned toward Murphy. The sec man shivered as he looked into the heart of his superior and saw a glimmer of insanity too close to the surface. He knew that the Gen would be a hard man to usurp and hoped that Wallace couldn't in some way know his plans. The Gen was a true believer, fired by the regs. He had the fire of generations burning in his veins.
They will, Sarge. You make them.
The fat man turned on his heel with an astonishing precision for someone his size and waddled off down the corridor.
And get that damn stoop monitor fixed!
Murphy looked after him, then turned to the five SecCor personnel he had with him. They were all trained by him personally and were the cream of his corps. Their uniforms were crisp and well laundered, although still carrying some stains from the chilling they had accomplished on the raids to the outside. They were drilled from the manual, and also had a few tricks Murphy had picked up along the way. They were the elite he would use when the time came. But how was he going to break this stalemate?
Looks like we got work to do.
Inside the chamber, both Doc and Dean had taken advantage of the time bought by Ryan's actions to recover fully from the effects of the jump. They stood, blasters ready for action, to one side of J.B., the armorer.
John Barrymore, if I may hazard a suggestion, we three are something of a Trojan horse, and could perhaps be of some use in that manner.
No sense there, Doc. Tell me a little more.
When the Trojans were at war with...
Not the history, Doc. Not now. Just what you mean for us.
Doc's lectures appeared at the worst moments, like now. He gave a short bow.
My apologies, John Barrymore. I shall endeavor to explain in simple terms, in order to save precious moments. If we are in here, and our opponents have no idea about us, then our companions can act as a decoy by appearing to surrender.
That's a stoop idea. Sure way to get everyone chilled. Why don't we just jump again?
Came across a chamber like this before. The door isn't the trigger. Maybe an earlier Mattrans, I don't know. This'll need triggering from out there.
I still say Doc's idea is double stoop.
Maybe not, Dean. Not if we're all quick enough. Ryan, you hear that?
We all heard. A slim chance is better than no chance, and I'll go bastard crazy unless we break this deadlock. People, I think it's the only way to draw them, whoever the hell they are, into the room. But we need to be triple alert here. Scatter as soon as the others appear.
Sure, Ryan. We're in.
Hey! You out there! How are we going to end this?
Only one way.
You outsiders throw down your blasters and we come and get you. No way you can get out, and there's more of us than you. Besides, we're under orders to keep you alive.
Ryan looked across at Christy, whose hair was still protectively clinging to her.
Sounds like shit to me.
Amen to that.
No, I think he's telling the truth. It's what comes after that worries me.
Huh?
I can't explain it, lover. It's just not clear enough.
The inactivity was making Jack restless.
Move or sit?
A born hunter and predator, Jack had the ability to stay still and patient for hours when tracking prey. Patience wasn't the problem. A decision had been made, and now he was itching to spring to action.
Let's do it.
Ryan threw the Steyr over the top of the upturned desk. He kept the Sig Sauer, holstering the blaster, and checked automatically for the Panga, secured in a sheath against his leg. Beside him, Christy threw her blaster out into the middle of the room. Mildred threw hers with reluctance.
Man.
The last to throw out his weapon was Jack, the heavy python thudding loudly on the floor. Like Ryan, Jack chose to keep something close to hand. The leaf-bladed throwing knives stayed secreted on him, hidden in the folds and patches of his jacket.
Okay, sounds good to me. Now come forward slowly.
Okay, people.
Almost as one, the companion stepped around the flimsy barriers of the overturned desks, Ryan fractionally ahead of the others. All kept their muscles as tight as whipcord, nerve ends jangling for the slightest sign of movement. It was a fairly large room, looking identical to the ones in all the redoubts they had come across. It was cleaner, and had less of an empty, desolate feel than the others. For all of that, it was just a standard control room. So there was that advantage. They knew the territory. Whoever they were facing wouldn't expect that. It wasn't much of an advantage, but it might be all they needed. Behind them, in the chamber, JB clamped his fedora on his head and adjusted the wire rims of his glasses. He could feel, rather than see, Dean tense up for action with the same granite stance as his father. Doc raised the Lama, tension transforming him from a seemingly mad old man into a taut killing machine. They were ready. Murphy heard the movements around the blind corner. He had sharp ears, honed by a lifetime of avoiding stickies and the ambushing gangs of outsiders he encountered every time he led a party from the redoubt. It was part of the hereditary chain that he'd been trained for since birth. When he knew they were in the center of the room, he nodded to one of his Sekhor.
Okay, Panner. Now!
Pry Fur-Class Panner was a short woman with hooded eyes, a heavy body build, and a grenade launcher. In spite of the extra weight, her uniform was too large for her. It showed the marks of being altered and gave her a deceptively unbalanced and clumsy look. In fact, her father had been a born killer, and her mother an outsider who'd slit her own throat after her daughter had been born, as though knowing the psychotic offspring she had produced. Panner liked her work. Too keenly. She was Murphy's most trusted ally, and it was only gene pool regs that stopped him from joining with her. A flicker of a sadistic smile crossed Panner's face.
Those fuckers'll wish they never tried to invade, Sarge.
The thought of what the intruders were about to suffer excited her. The grenade launcher in her hands was an experimental type, rarely seen in the Deathlands, and was one of only two that were left on the redoubt. She'd seen these grunts at work before. They didn't kill, but were far more subtle in their pain. It lasted longer, and left the sufferer alive for other tortures. Before Murphy had time to take in Panner's arousal, the stocky Sekwoman soldier swung her body in front of the doorway with a rebel yell that had been passed down her line since the days of Skydark.
Disperse!
At the sound of Panner's scream, the friends scattered across the room, diving for whatever scant cover they could find. Jack flipped over and landed on his feet behind a desk, one of the leaf-bladed knives balanced in the palm of his hand, perfectly weighted for throwing. Ryan also sought cover, rolling and coming to a halt with the Sig Sauer in hand. Something fired. A grenade launcher? Ryan's eye tried to sight the woman in the doorway.
Damn!
But she was gone. A grenade hit the wall above the chamber door and bounced in front of Christy.
Shit!
She threw herself away from the strangely shaped grin, which was oblong with a squared end and unlike anything she'd ever seen before. But a grin was a grin. It didn't have to be just one shape to be able to chill you. JB appeared in the chamber doorway, holding his Uzi, preferring its accuracy to the less controlled M4000, which could hit the rest of his party as easily as any enemy Sekhman.
Gas grin! Try to cover your mouth! Breathe as shallow as possible!
A pale white mist started to infuse the room. It had no smell, but an immediate effect. Ryan felt his eye mist with tears as the gas pricked at it.
Firefly! Need to get the hell out of here!
It seemed as though his brain were cut off from his body, the thoughts traveling miles to reach limbs that felt heavy and leaden. The SIG seemed to weigh more than usual, the weight dragging his arm down. The others were now out in the room, and they seemed to be moving in slow motion.
They're gas. They must be able to seal the room. Otherwise, the air conditioning system would spread it through the whole place. John, they must want us alive. Ugh.
Mildred!
JB was close to the floor, figuring that the gas would rise, being lighter than air, and that the air nearer the ground would be clearer, at least giving him a chance of staying conscious long enough to see what their captors looked like. Ryan was on the floor beside JB. Both men were struggling to stay conscious. JB swum in and out of focus in Ryan's good eye,